So my name is Alexa Rowland, and I am an outreach and recruitment analyst for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, specifically for the East Asia and the Pacific region as well. And so thank you all so much for taking the time to join us today on our virtual advising session. To give a feel about how this webinar is going to continue, I will provide kind of an overview of the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, along with an overview of the region, as well as highlight some awards in our region. I will not be going into too much detail about each and every award. If you've taken a look in our catalog of awards yet, you'll see that we do have over 50 awards available to the East Asia and Pacific region alone. So it's quite substantial. And so I do encourage you guys to kind of take a look at that catalog and filter through to see what award makes the most sense for you. So I will go over some highlights, and then I will also speak to the application components and kind of some tips and tricks for framing your application. And then I will move into a hopefully longer time period for a Q&A session with you all, because that's really the hope with this webinar, that we can answer any questions you may have. And so with that, I will say feel free to write in any questions that you already have. Hopefully some will be answered throughout the presentation, but if not, I will definitely get back to you at the end with the Q&A section. I will also go ahead and kind of navigate the catalog of awards as well and point you to some really useful online resources as you gather your materials for the August 1st deadline. Oh, and another note about this webinar, it is going to be recorded and posted on our website, so along with the PowerPoint deck. So that can be a useful tool as well. So we like to start the webinars and just kind of sharing information about the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program by taking a look at the history of the program, because the history leads to the mission of the program, and this really doesn't get lost on reviewers when thinking about your application components. So for the Fulbright Program, in 1945, after World War II, Senator J. William Fulbright of Arkansas introduced a bill which proposed using surplus war property to fund a program that increases a mutual understanding between people of the U.S. and people of other countries. So President Truman then signed the bill into law in 1946, and Congress created the Fulbright Program. The primary source of funding for the Fulbright Program is an annual appropriation by the U.S. Congress to the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, also known as ECA. And then my organization, IIE, administers the program on behalf of ECA here in the U.S., while Fulbright commissions and U.S. embassies abroad administer the program overseas. And so again, this larger Fulbright mission of increasing mutual understanding between people of the U.S. and people of other countries is definitely something you want to keep in mind as you craft your application components. So the core awards are composed of teaching, research, and or teaching combination teaching research grant activities for 3 to 12 months. Some countries do offer all disciplines awards, whereas others are seeking specific disciplines or specializations. Overall, we like to say that there really is a Fulbright available in each discipline and a Fulbright for everyone. It's just a matter of finding that particular award and fit. So again, you'll just want to make sure once you've identified an award, that you do meet those specific qualifications and the parameters of the award fit your proposed project so that it all makes sense and is cohesive. And as I mentioned before, the application deadline for this current competition cycle is Wednesday, August 1st. So it's coming up, but there is still plenty of time to really put together a competitive application. For most awards, but not all, you will be affiliating with a host institution. And they will act as your home base and provide the necessary resources you need in order to feasibly conduct the research project which you're proposing to do once in country. I will mention here that not all awards require an affiliation, and in fact, actually, some request no affiliation at all. So please don't be deterred if you don't have contacts abroad already. And we will offer as well some tips for developing these contacts abroad should you need a letter and you still don't necessarily have the contacts in country. So overall program eligibility requirements are shown here. Ultimately, you must be a U.S. citizen at the time of application. And the other requirements are award specific. So oftentimes in these presentations and even when I go on to answer some questions you may have, you'll hear me say it depends. And that is just because many of the awards set and outline their own preferred qualifications as well as eligible qualifications. So the award details are really where you're going to get the bulk of your information about whether you are eligible to apply or not. So some awards are open to professionals outside of academia, whereas others aren't. So just things to keep in mind, and additionally, the PhD or other terminal degree requirements do vary from country to country and award to award. So it may be the case that your discipline recognizes a master's as a terminal degree, for example, in fine arts. And so don't be deterred if you see PhD or other terminal degree required and you're not sure if you meet that bill. I will say, as with all award requirements, if you have any questions or are unsure of your eligibility, do feel free to send a copy of your CV to the appropriate program staff person listed within the award of interest, as we can kind of help navigate that process and ensure your eligibility before you move on to crafting those application components. And so further eligibility requirements regarding teaching grant activities, oftentimes each award may list under the additional qualifications section how many years of teaching they would like each applicant to have. And sometimes they'll even include the type of teaching that they will consider. So again, those award details are going to be really useful when you're really choosing the award in which you're applying to. And then a note here about Fulbright Scholar alums. So if you are a program alum, then you're eligible to apply, again, once it has been 2 years past your grant period end date. And again, if you have any questions about that aspect of the eligibility requirements, don't hesitate to reach out to us. So Fulbright is constantly trying to change and be more approachable for applicants. And because of this, some awards actually now offer a flex option. And this is an option that is designed for scholars who require multiple visits to the host country over short segments. So you must indicate plans for flex in your project statement, including a project timeline indicating these various visits. And you're also especially encouraged in flex, but also with other awards, to make contact with the local community in order to develop those long-term connections and collaborations that are a hope from your Fulbright grant. And so for flex, you will see it's available in 4 countries in the East Asia and Pacific region, and within the catalog of awards, there's a flex section. So that's where you'll know whether the award you're applying to allows flex or does not. And I'll point that out a little bit later on as well. We also have multi-country award opportunities. So we have regional research programs available, they're available in Sub-Saharan Africa, Middle East and North Africa, South and Central Asia. But we also have a regional program for the East Asia and Pacific program that is the ASEAN region, Southeast Asia regional program. And I do detail that award a little bit later on. And in addition to the regional award opportunities, we offer some specific awards that are designed to be in multiple countries while on your research grant. So we have, for the EAP region, we have the Cross-Strait Studies Award, which is for China and Taiwan. And again, I will detail that a little bit more later on. And then speaking to the Global Scholar Award opportunity, this is a chance for applicants who are interested in or whose work needs them really to be in two separate world regions. So you must propose work in two separate world regions, and usually it's split out by 2 to 3 different countries as well. And for the Global Scholar Award, topics must benefit from a global perspective, right? So reviewers are really going to be looking for why you are proposing each country, why is that necessary for the research work you're proposing, and what will be accomplished for each country segment planned. So that's just something to keep in mind if you are interested in that Global Scholar Award opportunity. Okay, so the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program to the East Asia and Pacific region spans a tremendous area of the world, from the physical geography of the region to history and culture. There are opportunities to teach and conduct research at world-renowned institutions as well as in remote places where you could be the first or only Fulbrighter at your host institution. With over 50 award offerings and close to 150 grants available to this region, the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program offers a variety of support for American faculty, researchers, and professionals at every stage of their career. I will note here that for this region in particular, should you seek a teaching-only grant activity, most countries don't require language proficiency, local language proficiency, for teaching-only grants, as all teaching will be in English. So again, you'll want to ensure that this is the case for the particular award you're looking at, but with regards to the East Asia and Pacific region, it really is the case that most higher education institutions are teaching and are seeking teachers to speak English in the classroom. And so grantees, regarding benefits for the East Asia and Pacific region, grantees receive funds to cover their housing and living expenses while on the grant. The stipends do vary by country. And sometimes within the country, particularly if the cost of living in the capital or major city, you know, differs significantly from other parts of the country. But in many places, you'll find that you can live comfortably on the stipend. And if you are seeking kind of more detailed information about the specific award benefits, each award does have a tab called Award Benefits, and you can click into that and see estimates for amounts of that you could possibly expect to receive, you know, of course, granted that budgeting and all of that good stuff is still to be expected once you are hopefully selected for the grant benefit. In addition to the stipends provided, grantees in the East Asia and Pacific region will also have the opportunity to apply to the Fulbright Regional Travel Program once in country during their grant period. And so not every region offers this. It's a nice appeal for the EAP region. These funds would support short-term, about 3 to 14 days, travel to other countries in the East Asia and Pacific region for activities such as lectures, workshops, graduate or faculty seminars, master classes or recitals, curricular advising, or panel presentations. And so this is a really great opportunity for you to connect with other researchers within this world region while on your grant opportunity. So for scholars who choose to go to the EAP region, they often walk away from the experience with long-lasting connections, an expanded network, and new perspectives on their lives, both personally and professionally. As one alumnus from Vietnam writes, this experience has rounded out the international focus of my work. Living somewhere for an extended period of time provides a different experience than reading or studying about a culture. The more I got to know people here, the more I could see similarities to my own world, which, you know, really speaks to the larger Fulbright program mission of connecting people from different countries. So over the coming slides, I will highlight various awards offered to this region to give you a sense of what's available. But, of course, as I mentioned, we're not going to detail all of them because this just would not be very exciting. And a note here about the catalog of awards is that it really is not an a la carte menu. Each country does have its own specific offerings, so you will need to kind of spend some time in there and read the award descriptions carefully as you decide on the award in particular to apply to. So I touched on these a little bit earlier today, the multi-country award opportunities. So the Cross-Strait Studies Research Program is an opportunity that seeks projects from all disciplines. However, comparative politics, environmental studies, international law and relations, as well as public policy are a few specializations which are particularly sought. And applicants may also propose to conduct short-term research in Hong Kong should their project call for it. A PhD or other terminal degree is required for this award. So the Cross-Strait Studies is where you will propose to conduct research in China, both China and Taiwan. And oftentimes that research is, you know, as noted here, on an issue concerning the relationships between mainland China and Taiwan. And so the ASEAN Research Program is an opportunity for individuals who seek to establish a focus on U.S.-ASEAN relations in their work or to undertake research on a comparative project that has implications for ASEAN or the U.S.-ASEAN relationship. So through this award, you have the opportunity to propose conducting research in two or three ASEAN countries, and your project statement must include justification for each country to be visited. A PhD is not required for this award, and it's open to academics as well as professionals. So here you'll see some highlights for the East Asia and the Pacific region. And when you open up the award catalog, you will see a variety of ways to search for awards. So in addition to searching by region, country, or discipline, you can also use the advanced search tool to filter by activity, degree required, and whether or not the award is open to early career applicants. Also, there's a keyword search functionality. So if you know you are wanting an award which seeks perhaps gender studies specialists, you can kind of navigate the catalog that way. And again, I will demonstrate this a little bit later on. But to share some highlights for this region, awards in East Asia and Pacific, they do span all activities and requirements. But the following are a very small subset of the awards available in each country, as well as the region as a whole. So the Australia Fulbright Distinguished Chair in Multiple Disciplines allows you to undertake research and collaborate on workshops or short seminars at the University of Newcastle, an established research leader in health and medicine, engineering, energy, and resources. And the University of Newcastle is a leader in providing education for Indigenous Australians. So for this distinguished chair in particular, they are seeking specific disciplines. It's not necessarily open to all. So I do encourage you to take a look within that catalog. For the Fulbright Distinguished Chair in Social Sciences to China, this award allows you to conduct research or a combination of teaching and research in your area of specialization at any appropriate host institution in China for 10 months. While applications from all disciplines are accepted, projects in global climate change, sustainability and the environment, public health, public policy, food security, and agriculture and disaster preparedness are preferred. This award includes, as well, an in-country travel allowance in order to guest lecture at other universities in China. So it really allows you to be exposed to other areas within the country. The Hong Kong and China Studies Research Award is for individuals who seek to establish a focus on Greater China in their work or to undertake research on a comparative project. A letter of invitation is required, and applicants are encouraged to collaborate with Hong Kong scholars. The Journalism Award to Japan was designed to provide opportunities for both junior and senior journalists working in print, broadcast, and digital media to become better informed about Japan. The grant length can be from 3 to 9 months, and this award is one of the awards available in this region that does offer the flex option, and a PhD or other terminal degree is not required for the Journalism Award. So the Distinguished Lectureship at Yonsei University allows you to teach two courses per semester to undergraduate and or graduate students for 1 or 2 semesters. Applicants must be full professors with tenure at the time of application for this particular award. And all teaching, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, will be in English. You may also be able to pursue collaborative research with your department at the host institution. So that can be another way to include a research aspect to your project. For the Macau All Disciplines Award, University of Macau is seeking scholars to either teach or do a combination of teaching and research in your area of expertise at the university. Applications are preferred in the health sciences, applied physics, and traditional Chinese medicine specializations. A letter of invitation should not be sought for this award, as the U.S. Consulate to Hong Kong and Macau will arrange your affiliation should you be selected. So this is really an opportunity for them to listen to the needs of the university and see where there's a nice fit for you. And then lastly, the Agriculture and Fisheries Modernization Award to the Philippines is an opportunity to teach undergraduate and or graduate courses and or conduct advanced research in agriculture, fisheries, or any subfields that address modernization efforts for the Philippine agriculture and fisheries sectors for a grant period of 4 to 6 months. Applications are particularly sought in agriculture, agricultural engineering, and agricultural economics. All right, so what does an application consist of? We will collect basic biographical information within the application form, and then there's the project statement, which is really the main component of your application in that this is your proposal, right, where you will outline what you hope to do while on this grant opportunity, and I'll go into a bit more detail on the next slide. In addition to those items, you will upload a CV or resume, which we encourage you to tailor to your award as it should be no more than 6 pages, or if you're applying for a Distinguished Chair Award, then it can be no more than 8 pages. You will register 3 references who will then submit letters of reference on your behalf directly into the system. And if you're applying for a teaching or a combined teaching research grant activity, then one of the reference letters must address your teaching and come from someone who can speak to your teaching abilities, who have, you know, proper authority to evaluate your teaching skills. Depending on the type of grant activity or the award, you might be asked to submit a syllabi, select bibliography, language proficiency report, a letter of invitation, or supplemental materials if you're applying in a creative arts discipline. So the project statement is your opportunity to lay out your proposed project specifics in as much detail as possible. You will want to address questions that reviewers may have, such as why are you seeking Fulbright funding, and why this country or institution or organization in particular, why do you need to be in country to do what you're proposing to do. So you'll really want to focus on what you plan to do. If you're applying to a teaching activity grant, then the specific courses that you're planning to teach or the methods and goals of your research, how you will get the end results that you're seeking through this opportunity. Additionally, you will want to address outcomes from the grant. So what potential impact will this have on your host and home institution, as well as you, both personally and professionally. And some traits that reviewers definitely look for, so do try to have them come across in your application components are, how adaptable are you, right? How flexible are you? How well will you deal with challenging situations? It may be the case that you've never been to the country that you're applying to, and so how will reviewers know that you'll be able to perhaps handle a different country from the U.S. and perhaps different access to resources or institutions in general once in country? How are you going to handle those kinds of situations? And so, as I mentioned before, awards do vary in letter of invitation requirement. For some, it is needed in order to apply. For others, it's strongly preferred or preferred. Many awards will list the types of affiliations which are appropriate, And some awards include contact information for specific institutions and country that you are welcome to reach out to directly in order to receive this letter. If a point of contact is not listed and you are free to identify your own host institution, then there are several routes you can go. Some applicants begin by reaching out to the head of a relevant department, but we also encourage applicants to contact specific professors or researchers with interests similar to their own. So perhaps somebody has a body of research work that really relates to what you're interested in and hoping to further conduct research in, and they can maybe be a great point of contact to start off if they are affiliated with the country of interest. So in reaching out to foreign universities for the first time, we generally suggest that scholars send a copy of their CV and a brief description of the grant activities that you're hoping to pursue. And if your contacts agree there's a match, then you will request that letter of invitation to include with your application. There's not a set template for these letters, but we recommend that the host outline the activities for which you're invited, the period of time for which you're invited, a description of, you know, the host institution's interest in your project and how it will benefit their institution. And a note about the letter is that it should be addressed to you, and it should come from the person with appropriate authority to provide you with an invitation. So this may be a dean or a department chair at your identified host institution. In addition to reviewing the university websites and kind of conducting your own research out of the CIES website, you may also find it helpful to survey the work of past Fulbrighters. And so we do offer a Fulbright Scholar Directory on our website. And this page allows you to search for program alumni by grant year, host country, host institution, project title, as well as discipline. So this can really be a great resource to see what institutions in the country you're interested in are familiar with Fulbright and have hosted Fulbrighters in the past. So how will your application be competitive? Kind of have been hinting to or outright mentioning this whole time, you know, we do recommend that you keep the larger Fulbright mission of promoting mutual understanding in mind as you craft these application components. This is the overarching goal, and it really is not lost on reviewers and posts and commissions abroad when they are selecting finalists. So why are you interested in conducting this project in the proposed host country that you've identified? What will this do for you and for your home institution, as well as your host institution, right? It's this exchange of knowledge and experience. So what expertise and skills can you offer? Where is this exchange kind of happening, and how are you outlining that in your project statement? As I mentioned before, you will also really want to articulate your flexibility and adaptability. You all will be acting as unofficial U.S. cultural ambassadors while you're abroad on your grant opportunity. So reviewers want to feel sure and confident in their selecting you to represent the U.S. as an unofficial cultural ambassador. So do think about how that is coming across in your application. And then almost as important as what you are going to do once you are in country are those long-lasting outcomes and impacts that this project will have for your professional development, for your home campus and future collaborators and relationships, as well as perhaps internationalizing your campus and curriculum upon your return to the U.S. All right, so the application deadline, as I mentioned, is August 1st for this current competition cycle. And to give you a feel of the process, typically in August, once applications have been received, IIE staff then conducts a technical review process in order to ensure that all required components of the application are there and accounted for, and then it moves on to a two-step review process here in the U.S. So the first is a discipline peer review committee, which reviews applications and makes comments from a discipline-specific perspective, which then moves on to the regional peer review peer review committees for consideration. Regional peer review committees are made up of people who have in-country experience and who look through the applications against the review criteria, which is actually located on our website. And I will point to it and kind of navigate to it when I move off this slide to our website in particular. It is a really useful tool, the review criteria, as it speaks to the kind of questions and information that reviewers will be looking for in your application. So it's just good to know and have before you submit. And then once the peer review and recommendations are made, then those applications which are recommended will go overseas to our colleagues abroad for selection. And what I'll note here is that grantees are notified on a rolling basis, so everyone does not find out at the same time. This is usually done by country, so it's possible that your colleague who applied to Japan will be notified in March, yet it's May, and you still don't know about your Thailand application. So this is kind of where, you know, your patience and adaptability are already in full effect as these notifications are finalized and released, and we do appreciate your patience during that process. And so I've been referring to resources on the website throughout this presentation, and I strongly encourage you to visit our website and take a look at them. As I mentioned in the overview just now of the timeline, the peer review committee views applications against the review criteria, which we offer online. And you'll want to make sure that your application addresses these type of checklist type items that reviewers are looking for. Additionally, I would recommend looking at the specific project statement guidance and broader application guidelines available on our website. If you haven't already, do sign up for My Fulbright, in which you can register your interests and receive relevant information about awards within your region of interest or discipline of interest, as well as receive webinar invitations as we come up to the August 1 deadline. And so I am going to now just navigate to the catalog of awards just to give you a feel for those search filters that I was mentioning. So the website for the catalog of awards is awards.cies.org. As I mentioned, you can navigate with, if you know you're interested in the East Asia and Pacific region, you can just select it here and see what's available. Or if you know a specific country that you have in mind, you can search that way or a discipline. But we'll do the region for now. And so you'll see here, this will say 53 awards found. And then over to the left side of the page is where you'll have those kind of advanced filters to really boil down and see the award that is perfect for you. So you can separate out by the type of activity. If you know you really only want to do a teaching-only grant activity, you can select it and then go into the degree requirement, perhaps. You don't have a PhD or other terminal degree, and then search awards, and you'll see, so we have 9 awards found that offer teaching-only grant activities and don't require a PhD or other terminal degree. So then you can go ahead and click into one, and this will give you an outline of kind of the hope of the grant activity that you will be applying for, along with the grant length, some specific grant dates. Some do require specific start dates, so that's something to keep in mind. And if you have any questions about them, that's where you'll reach out to me, either via phone or email. My information is posted over here. And then you will also be able to take a look at the award benefits tab that I mentioned, along with award requirements. This is where you'll find whether a letter of invitation is required for your application or, as I mentioned, strongly preferred, whatever it may be, as well as the language proficiency requirements. So for this award, as I mentioned earlier, all teaching will be in English, so additional language proficiency is not required. And then that largely is the case for teaching grants to the East Asia and Pacific region. But for combined teaching research, oftentimes, as it's outlined here, you will just want to speak to the feasibility of conducting your research in English within your project statement should you not have that local language skill. Okay, so I think I'm going to pause here and just take a look at the questions that have come in. So thank you for sending them in. And just bear with me for a moment as I kind of read through, but do feel free to continue sending your questions in. Okay, so we have a question. Is it okay to submit two letters of invitation? And so for this, I will say that kind of it depends, Fulbright answer. That is because it does largely depend on the country and the award in particular that you're applying to. What I would encourage you to do is if you've identified an award, then definitely reach out to us at eastasiapacific@iie.org if it's in our region, and we can kind of take it from there. It's based on visa requirements and what the posts and commissions abroad really are seeking for the application in particular. So I'm sorry I can't give an answer right now, but do reach out to us with some more detailed information about the award, and we'll take it from there. Okay. And let's see. Okay, so how long should I aim to be in country? For what duration should I pitch the project, and how will that choice help or hurt me in the application process? So again, that will also depend on really the award details. The grant length will be posted here, and you are welcome to propose any time frame. So this is a 4 to 10 month, for example, the Cambodia award is a 4 to 10 month grant, and you can really propose any time that makes sense. What reviewers are looking for is going to be that feasibility piece, right? So how much time or how little time do you need to actually conduct and finish the project you're proposing? Or, I mean, if it is a teaching or a teaching and research grant, oftentimes they hope that you will be plan to be in country for the semester or the year, depending on what you're proposing. But for research, it's all about the project proposal in particular. Okay, so we received a question I read online that the deadline was early October, not August 1st. So great question. That is likely the deadline for the U.S. student program. Fulbright is kind of a monster of a program. We have many facets to it, and we also have various application deadlines going on around the same time. So I do know the U.S. student program has a deadline in early October. However, today and for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar program, the deadline to apply is August 1st. And that's a Wednesday this year, so just something to keep in mind. We also do encourage you all to really kind of get started within that application, the sooner the better, because we don't want it to come down to the wire and then you're having a technical issue, right? So we do recommend submitting at least a day or two in advance of that August 1 deadline so that you are not locked out of the system. Okay, and so when applying for a combined teaching research award, is it best to have some local language facility for the research component? So again, that'll depend on the award in particular. However, I will say, you know, if it's necessary for the work that you're proposing to do, then it will be beneficial to have some local language skills. And speaking to, even if it isn't required, kind of preparing yourself with the local language, taking some steps to learn it and so that you can at least be conversational in it, should you be selected for your grant activity, is never a bad thing, right? Again, this is an kind of person-to-person exchange program. So even though your research project or your teaching aspect of your project is going to be the bulk of your grant opportunity, the hope is that you will kind of connect and establish those long-term collaborations with local scholars and the local community as well. Okay, so then we are still getting quite a few questions coming in, so thank you so much for submitting. Just bear with me as I read them. Okay, so we received, is there a program for multiple visits to one country? So that is going to be really based on you know, the flex option, whether or not that's available. And so I'm just using this award that I have on the screen here. This is where you'll find that information. And so for the Cambodia award, flex is not an option. However, if you were to select the region once more and then go into the grant length filter area here, you can select flex and see what's available there. So then you can click in. This is one of the awards I highlighted here. And this will provide more information about what a flex grant means and the minimum length, maximum length, and just more information to include in your project statement as well. Okay. Bear with me again. Okay, so we received a question about Distinguished Chair Awards, and so what Distinguished Chair Awards are available in Southeast Asia and the Philippines. So the Philippines does not have a Distinguished Chair Award. However, again, you can kind of filter this way, select the region, and then go into the category, and that's where you'll see Core Distinguished Chair. Select that toggle, and you'll see what's available here. So many in Australia, and then China and Korea. That said, even though it's not a Distinguished Chair for the Philippines, you are welcome to still apply, as it is open to all levels of scholars. And that doesn't only go for Philippines, but really any award that is open to all levels of scholars, and you're welcome to apply. Okay, so, oh yes, thank you for the reminder, showing where to access the review criteria. Let me take a moment and just go into the main website here. So this is the homepage for the Fulbright Scholar Program, CIES.org. And then you can go into Programs, U.S. Scholars, Core, click in there. And here's where you'll find some really good resources. I recommend the review criteria, which you can click into, and it breaks it out by the type of grant activity and what those reviewers are specifically looking for. And then also another really useful tool is the application guidelines. And so this is, again, you'll branch it out by the type of grant activity, and this includes all of the information that you should be submitting, the various application components that are required for that grant activity, along with hyperlinks to the various online resources we offer too. So this can help for project statement guidance, take a look at some of the questions that we suggest you kind of think about as you craft your project statement, and so on and so forth. Okay, thank you for bearing with me as I read through some questions that come in. Okay, so can I apply for global under East Asia and Pacific? So for that global award opportunity, you will identify the specific countries that you're interested in applying to and conducting research and work under. So yes, you can apply for a country within the East Asia and Pacific region, but for that Global Scholar Award, you'll also need to include a reason to visit another world region, so in addition to East Asia and Pacific. So that's just something to keep in mind along with that global perspective for that type of award opportunity. Okay, so is a letter of invitation required for a research program in general? If so, why? So again, letter of invitation requirements are going to depend on the particular award you're looking at. And the reason we require those, we can click in here, and you'll see it right under here, a letter of invitation is required. And so the reason being is that they will act as your home base, right? So, and they are there to provide the access you may need to any of the resources that are necessary to feasibly conduct your project and your activity in country. Okay. Okay, so will Fulbright consider a research proposal if it's not specifically requested by a host country but an important issue to the country? So great question. We do offer many all disciplines awards to EAP, to East Asia and Pacific region in particular, in which they don't necessarily list off the preferred disciplines. There are some awards that do have preferred disciplines and preferred specializations, but even those awards, any all-discipline award is open to receiving projects and research outlines for any and all disciplines. So if you have, you know, reason to be in country and you've identified this country in particular and they only have an all-disciplines award, then do apply and do kind of outline the importance of the work that you're proposing as well. So all disciplines are there to kind of actually receive applications from all disciplines. So we encourage you to apply. Okay. So we have, if the grant date section states that grants must begin in February 2020, does that mean a scholar cannot be in the country prior to that if they would like to be for their project? So great question. Again, it's going to depend on the country in particular. As you'll see, like with Australia, and I know New Zealand offers that as well, they do have kind of strict start times, and that is mostly due to the fact that they offer an in-country orientation. So I don't think that there would be an issue to you already being in-country. However, you'll want to make the case for why you need Fulbright funding if you're already able to go to the country ahead of the grant start date. But if you have any kind of questions or, you know, outstanding reasons why you need to be in country before February 2020, then do check in with us at East Asia and Pacific at IAE.org, because we can kind of check in with our colleagues abroad to really see if they're open to various start times. But more often than not, if it's explicitly stated as a specific date within that grant date section, they're going to want you to apply with that project in mind. Okay, so thank you again for all of these questions coming in. I appreciate it, and just bear with me a little bit as I take a look at them. Okay, so can we apply to the student program and the scholar program? You're more likely than not only you're more likely to be eligible for only one program, and so I would encourage you to reach out to program staff with kind of your specific situation and perhaps a copy of your CV to really identify which program makes the most sense for you. Okay, is there a way to see previous ratios of submitted applications to successful applications, speaking to the competitiveness? So unfortunately, per Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board policies, we are unable to share statistics on application numbers for the U.S. Scholar Program. And so really what we ask here is that you consider country specificity, right? It really is key to Fulbright. So thinking about where your project needs and should take place and or where you have contacts in country and going at it from that route instead of the competitiveness oftentimes makes for a more competitive application. Okay, yes. So we just received a question about this session and whether or not it's being recorded. Yes, this whole webinar will be recorded. It is currently being recorded and it will be posted on our website in the same area that you found the schedule. I can navigate to it, and it'll be posted within about 5 business days. So if you go into CORE, or I'm sorry, go to the homepage, scroll on down, you'll see the webinar section here, and you'll see upcoming webinars posted here, and then once the recording is filed and converted, it'll be posted here in the past section. Thank you for that reminder. And thank you for bearing with me as we go through more questions. Okay. Okay, so regarding the rolling notifications, are we notified at each phase during the review process about our elimination or advancement toward the next phase? Thank you for that question as well. So you will be notified by IIE staff really for the first time whether or not your application was recommended or not recommended, and that is based on the findings from the U.S. Peer review committee. So there's the two with the discipline specific one and then the regional peer review committee. So once those findings are in order, you will hear from us at IIE about whether or not your application is going overseas. And then should it go overseas, should you be recommended, that's when it'll go overseas, and then you'll get, the next time you'll hear from IIE is regarding the final notification. And so that's with that large kind of window of time. And we do offer the timeline. I just want to share. We do offer the timeline online. If you go, again, into the Programs and Core timeline section here, you'll see kind of, you know, again, large windows of time, but the two times you'll hear from IIE are whether or not you are recommended and then with the final notifications as well. Okay, so thank you again. I'm just going through these questions. Okay, so if I received an MFA and want to apply as a filmmaker, should I apply under the student program or under the scholar program? So MFA, you are eligible to apply under the scholar program. We consider that a terminal degree. And so you'll just want to look at the options available and see what makes sense for you. Okay, so for cellular molecular biology, teaching and research proposals, how does one justify going abroad for the research part? So it could be the case that you are justifying it by perhaps identifying a scholar in your area of research, such as cellular and molecular biology, that you are particularly interested in connecting with. That can be a really great route. You know, if there is someone that you're hoping to learn from, that can make a strong case for being in country. Additionally, it can be the case that there is a host institution in a particular country that has access to or specific resources that maybe aren't available as readily available here in the U.S. So that can be another route to go to. Okay, so thank you again. I am just going through these questions as they come in. Okay. Okay, great. So how tightly should the proposed work and time be tied to the host institution beyond demonstrating how we will mutually benefit from one another? Okay, so that will be in conversation between you and the host institution. Really, you know, Fulbright is pretty flexible in the work you can propose to do and how you can collaborate with a host institution that you've identified. So it can be in conversation with them to really try to navigate what is useful and beneficial to them and to get a feel for perhaps it is, you know, conducting a teaching and research combined grant activity versus just a research activity if that is their hope. That can be how you decide that grant activity piece. So it really does kind of just involve communication with your identified host institution. And so I do just want to have another question here. What is the best way to identify a potentially interested university? What I'll recommend and what I did recommend a little bit earlier is to take a look at that Fulbright Scholar Directory. So again, if you navigate to our overall homepage, you can click into the Fulbright Scholar Directory here. And this is where you can kind of filter and take a look at alumni of the program and see where they have been in the past and what institutions are familiar with the Fulbright program. So you can select a program country and toggle U.S. Scholar search. And this is where you'll see their discipline, specialization perhaps if it's available, and their host institution. So that can just be a good point to see the institutions in Vietnam, per se, who are familiar with the program. And you can even click into the scholar information here. Oh, that wasn't a good one, but the more recent alumni will have more detailed project titles about exactly what they were researching or teaching while on this grant opportunity. Okay, so I know we are coming up on time, and there are still questions coming in, which is great. I want you to know that if I can't answer your question right now, we will be following up with you all, and so all of the questions are stored in our system, so do expect a follow-up email from us. So let me just see if there's any other kind of broad questions that we can ask. Okay, so can you address independent scholars' eligibility? So if you're applying not as an academic but rather as a professional, something to consider is going to be those long-lasting outcomes and impacts. So I know we speak to the possibility of internationalizing your campus and your curricula, but that might not be the case for you. So you'll really want to consider how this opportunity will affect you personally and professionally. But do keep in mind this is a U.S., a binational U.S. and other nation program. So they want to see where those impacts and outcomes will have an effect here in the U.S. too. So perhaps that's speaking to your larger discipline as a whole and your field that you are working in and what these results might mean for that and for the U.S. Along those lines. Okay, but I do, in the interest of time, I know we're coming up on 3:00. So I just want to take a moment and say thank you all so much for joining us today. I know there are a number of questions that I wasn't able to get to, but please rest assured that I will be following up with some answers. And then I also just want to note here, if you have any other questions as you work through the application process, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. We are here to help. For this region in particular, our email is eastasiapacific@iie.org, and so do reach out. And again, this webinar is recorded, and it will be posted on our website for you all to refer back to. But thank you all so much again for joining, and I will talk to you soon. Take care. Thanks.